Hello and welcome to the London Philharmonic Orchestra's January podcast. Happy New Year from me, Edward Seckerson. This month I'm looking ahead to the orchestra's Sibelius Symphony series, talking to conductor Osmo Vanska about his very special relationship with the music of the Finnish master. And I'll be looking back to November, asking one of the orchestra's violinists to share some of her thoughts about the Alfred Schnittke Festival. Don't forget that you can find out all details of our concerts and recordings on our website, www.lpo.org.uk. Finnish conductor Osmo Vanska is one of the foremost interpreters of the music of his fellow countryman Jean Sibelius. He understands the landscape of the music, both literally and metaphorically speaking. He knows how to unlock it emotionally and how the music somehow exists in its own time and space. In short, he knows how it goes and how important it is that the symphonies feel organic and, still more importantly, elemental. Between the 28th of January and the 5th of February, he'll conduct four concerts of Sibelius's music, featuring all seven symphonies, orchestral songs with soprano Helena Juntinen, and less well-known works for solo cello and violin with orchestra. I spoke to him about the choices of music for this series and started by asking what Sibelius means to Finns today. Osmo Vanska, your complete cycle of the Sibelius symphonies with the London Philharmonic begins, logically enough, with number one. And I have in my mind the vision of you as principal clarinetist of the Helsinki Symphony actually playing that opening solo at some point. I mean, I presume you played it many times with them.
Yes, I have played it many times in with different orchestras, included the Orchestra of Sibelius Academy, where I was studying when we went to Heber von Karajan Orchestra competition to Berlin. Jorma mm-hmm. Panula, my later teacher, conducted, and that was my privilege to play that solo. But also when I got my first professional job, that was 1971 in Turku, southwest part of Finland. And the very first concert was programmed so that we started with the Sibelius First Symphony. Mm. So I know the feeling.
Yeah.
How to play the concert.
It evokes a very particular landscape, that bleak sound, those deep pedal points that became a trademark of the composer.
Right.
I'm wondering if a native of Finland, as opposed to someone from the outside, has the same if that music evokes the same feeling for the landscape as those of us that are outside the country.
It might, and it might not. The landscape is some kind of interesting question, because I know lots of people, they see that they are speaking always about landscape when it's connected to the music of Sibelius. Personally, I there might be some ideas about the landscape, but mostly that music gives me an idea about the human being and how a person is struggling with life and when there is no hope and then there is a hope I think that this connection to human being is stronger for me than the connection to the landscape. But I understand very well people who are speaking about landscape and landscape could be some kind of picture of soul or heart too, and definitely the First Symphony opens so well some kind of picture, which is obviously a little bit melancholic, not maybe not so dark on that moment, but it's there are many ways to feel the music, and that's one of the greatest things.
It's interesting that you don't see it as being particularly Finnish.
Well, Sibelius wrote his second symphony in Italy. Is it the Finnish landscape or Italian landscape?
Yes.
We could have a long conversation about that.
Yes, absolutely. What other characteristics do you think contribute to this unique music? Because it is one of the very particular number of composers that are instantly identifiable. I mean, many composers are, but it's a very particular sound world. What characteristics contribute, do you think, to his character as a composer?
Well, good question, very good question, and also quite large. I think that, first of all, Sibelius wrote music very, very honestly. He didn't want to please anyone. We just take the Fourth Symphony, and I think that he didn't care if anyone is going to like it or not. It was music he had to write, and that's some kind of trademark. Not always, but quite often. It means also that we got some kind of original music, because he didn't want to copy anyone, and he didn't want to do, for example, this kind of German linguistical areas music, which was so popular for the time. On the time, and he just wrote his own music, and that's why the German critics criticized him, because it didn't sound like what they were used to. And the emotional scale in Sibelius's music is really, really strong. It has this kind of triumph there. There is a lot of sadness, grief, and then it's turning to hope, some kind of light at the end of the tunnel. But one thing which is always speaking to me very strongly is that quite often happiness is there with tears.
Yes.
Even in the end of the Fifth Symphony, which is really like glorious ending, I feel so much tears. Someone has said very, very cleverly that all the seven symphonies are like children in one family. All there are personality with all seven, but there are differences also. And that's why they are standing.
Do you think it's important to perform them chronologically so we get a journey?
I think that it gives better chance to the audience to learn and to recognize how the progress as a composer happened, and also it's a nice journey to start with the younger composer and then go to the older. Number three is some kind of a problem to put to the program, because it is shorter, and so that's why we start this one concert with number three, and we end
with
number two.
It's interesting, you get some insight into the way he was thinking from the diaries he kept, particularly around the Fifth Symphony, which had a long 4-year gestation, and it's fascinating. The two versions are really fascinating to see.
The first versions, both in the Fifth Symphony and Violin Concert, also in Saga, they are wilder. They are much, much wilder, and then the second versions are like polished, and everything is in right place. There are people who believe that those wild versions are more interesting.
Yes, because I think
because there is a bit more life.
Mm. Mm.
And then you are I think that he's behaving more sophisticated in the last versions.
Yes.
But something unclean, something real,
yes.
Strong part of life, we can find out from first.
Yes,
versions.
Elemental. Pieces to couple with these symphonies. Particularly interested in the songs, orchestral songs, including that stonking piece, Luonata, which I do think is an amazing...
It's wonderful.
Just
very
amazing.
Contemporary piece.
Yes.
Really. It's a story about how the world was created by Kalevala, our national epos, and it's really contemporary piece of music. I don't think there is any other piece by Sibelius which is really so abstractive and uses modern colors of music, and still it's connected to the past as his music always, and it's short also, very demanding for the soprano.
Yeah, tell us about Helena Juntunen, because we don't know her here.
Well, Helena is a good friend of mine and one of these. These younger generation stars, I really love her voice, and her character, her temperament, how she's doing things.
What about some of the other orchestral songs that may not be as familiar to us?
The whole idea about the songs came when I just recognized that I have always done the symphonies with the violin concerto, and that's it. Okay. So all music lovers in London, they know the violin concerto, so why don't we give something else? And then that's why we are doing this collections of songs. Actually, Sibelius wrote many songs, and it's not so well-known part of his work. So that's why I would like to introduce those things, which are real music from Sibelius, no doubt about that, and actually he had very close connection to lyrics and to voice.
He wrote very well for the voice,
yeah.
I'm
sure that people will be really, if they don't know, they will be surprised and pleased about.
And of course Tapula as well, which is like some people call it the Eighth Symphony.
Yeah.
I mean that's a wild and wonderful piece as well.
Yeah, after Seventh Symphony, maybe Tapiola was some kind of cue, what kind of music Sibelius wanted to write after the symphony.
Yes,
and,
yes.
And then we have also those two small pieces for cello and orchestra and violin for orchestra, which are really, really wonderful pieces and touching pieces of music and I guess almost no one has heard them before.
Do you think Sibelius's fame and familiarity the world over has made it difficult for other Finnish composers?
Yeah, they are speaking about the shadow of Sibelius, but not only difficult. I think that it has been some kind of has been a model also for so many composers, not only in Finland but in this case particularly in Finland. I think that Sibelius has given an idea that there is a possibility to make good music and why don't you try, and this has really happened. We have so many composers.
Reviews Roundup. Last November's festival exploring the work of Russian composer Alfred Schnittke was a fascinating mix of the familiar and unfamiliar, placing works by Wagner, Berg and Haydn in sharp juxtaposition to the wildly eclectic and highly personal music of Schnittke. We heard the bulk of his unfinished opera, The History of Dr. Faustus. We heard his cosmic Third Symphony, his second cello concerto, choral and chamber music. We emerge with an amazing impression of his life and times, and with a richer for it. So what if Schnittke's unique brand of polystylism sometimes teeters a little close to impersonation for my taste? In performances as electrifying as we heard from all the participants, not least, of course, Vladimir Yurovsky and the LPO, this music communicates, no doubt about that. Sometimes it stares you out. Festivals like this are not just desirable, but vital in keeping London at the forefront of international music. I shall long treasure the tango to the abyss at the climax of Dr. Faustus, a very unseemly demise, like a Kurt Weill hallucination. Violinist Claire Duckworth shares her thoughts on performing in this festival and has a look at what the critics made of this uncategorisable composer.
I'm co-principal second violin and I've been a member of the LPO for just over 4 years now. The Schnittke Festival was quite interesting. The last time I think I'd played any was actually when I was back at music college, and we had a festival there of his music, and most of my contact back then was with the chamber side. So to do full orchestra and see the bits of the opera and things, that was interesting for me. And I think I saw a whole new side to him doing that. I think the main piece I remembered from before was a two-violin duo where we had to do all sorts of crazy things like whistle and play tunes by detuning our pegs. So it was nice to do something meaty where I didn't have to do so many special effects. I think everyone was probably pleasantly surprised by how it was received and the end result of each concert. Because in rehearsal, the rehearsals were very detailed, and especially for the Third Symphony, with these massive forces, and we were rehearsing maybe with a couple of people at a time, and it was hard to judge how the final picture was going to be. But I think the performance went incredibly well, and people's reactions were really interesting. People were very enthusiastic, and a lot of people, I actually saw a lot of people leaning over the balconies around the backs of the stage. Really, they couldn't, the amount of percussion that was going on, and then when the two guitars started and the huge array of keyboards as well, people were really leaning over the edge to see what was going on. It was such an event, and Vladimir had actually said it's a piece where, as we were trying to cram these immense forces onto the stage, and there were so many problems with people being on the wrong level or trombones not being able to move because they had to just get their slide in between the gap in the music stands. And Vladimir was saying it was almost more appropriate to a stadium, which we all laughed at the time and were saying we should take it to Wembley. But actually, I think he has a point, and people were quite blown away by it. I think the response from the critics has been quite interesting. I've been picking out a few things online, and a lot of them are actually talking about Schnittke himself as a composer. Do they like him or not? And they do refer to the performance, but it's more a bigger picture of what they thought of his works. And all sorts of comments like Schnittke became too versatile for his own good, and all this, or how polystylistic he was. And someone said, I think it was Andrew Clark in the Financial Times, actually said, we know Schnittke better now, but a great composer, the jury's still out. And I mean, I think I maybe agree, if I can admit that. I enjoyed certain aspects of all the pieces we did. And it was also quite interesting that he uses the strings quite differently to other composers. We're out of our normal world, really, and we're being used to play, we're playing constantly on a loop quite often, or in the cello concerto, the very last section, we're holding a note for a really long time. It's a good half page. And so physically, it's actually a bit different for us what's happening. But yeah, I think as the opera Faust, when we, the third act, everyone really enjoyed when that really got going. I think someone said something really interesting, if I can find my piece of paper. Yeah, so camp and banal as to touch the sublime. And I'm not sure sublime, but it was certainly fantastic. And I mean, just the sheer vocal feats for the countertenor were absolutely amazing. And he did it in high heels and fishnets, which he has to get some points for. But there were other bits of the opera that I maybe, the music sort of slowed down a bit and there wasn't so much direction. But when he really gets going, it was really exciting to play, and it was quite an event. Another interesting comment that I found online, talking about the symphony, someone said that the music makes us realise that the serious work of nonsense can accomplish as much as any cohesive, artificial, artistic statement can. Which I thought was quite interesting. I'm not sure it ever descends to nonsense, but it's certainly there's a very dry sense of humour behind a lot of it. And I think the symphony, it took till the end of the concert for us to really get the feel for that piece. And looking back, I enjoyed it way more than I expected to. I like the fact that Vladimir does take risks with his programming, and sometimes we worry that we're not going to pull in as many punters as we would hope to, but I think we do attract a different audience as well with some of the programmes. And Schnick obviously does have a following, and I think has won some fans over this. And Neil Fisher in The Times said, "Is there a better concert programmer than Vladimir Yurovsky? The Russian conductor is currently climbing a mountain for the London Philharmonic Orchestra's continuing exploration of the composer Alfred Schnittke, whose brazen eclecticism takes you to a musical hinterland that practically requires its own visa."
Recordings. In December, the nominations for the 52nd Grammy Awards were announced. Now, these awards celebrate the best new releases of 2009 across many different categories. And it's great news that the London Philharmonic Orchestra's recording of Jennifer Higdon's percussion concerto with soloist Colin Currie and conductor Marin Alsop has been nominated in the Contemporary Classical Composition category. And we're eagerly awaiting the awards themselves at the end of the month, when the winner will be announced. As an ex-percussionist myself, this concerto is a great favourite of mine. In particular, its wicked conclusion, where the soloist is joined by four orchestral percussionists for some kitchenware fireworks. Colin Currie is, as ever, terrific. So I'll let Colin play us out this month. Do join me again in February to hear the orchestra's dynamic principal guest conductor, Yannick Nezet-Séguin, talking to me about his approach to French music.